Hey y'all, it's Justine Mentor from Mentor Management. I'm an LA-based dance choreographer and educator turned career coach, and I'm all about inspiring, motivating, and educating professional dancers. I'm so excited to bring you Dance Careers Unfiltered, where we chat about the nitty-gritty behind the business side of the entertainment industry, the stuff that people don't know they need to know. Let's dive in.
Welcome to Dance Careers Unfiltered. Today's guest is Courtney Ortiz, an amazing dancer, educator, and small business owner based in New York. She's also the host of the Making the Impact podcast. I met Courtney almost 10 years ago teaching on a convention together, and since then, she has literally made a huge impact in the dance world with her incredible talent and drive. We chat about how the New York audition scene has changed since the pandemic, how to break barriers in the beginning of your career, and why being in the driver's seat of your journey is paramount. Please welcome Courtney. I'm so good. How are you?
I'm good.
Tell everyone who you are and like just a little smidgen of who you are and what you do in the industry.
Sure. So my name's Courtney Ortiz. I live in New York City and I am a professional dancer, a teacher, educator, a judge, a small business owner. I wear a lot of hats in the industry. I'm also a podcaster as well. Yes. And I have been in New York for over 15 years and grew up as a competitive dancer and then started my professional career at 18. I've done a bunch of fun gigs through the years. I mean, I did the whole musical theater thing and I still do to this day. I've performed in West Side Story and Finding Neverland and In the Heights and Jerome Robbins Broadway. I had the opportunity to dance on the Fosse Verdon FX TV show, and I played young Bob Fosse while he was a child. What in the world? And I was the dance double. I was not him. I was the dance double. It's such a crazy credit. I'm very grateful.
Major
props. It's like a crazy one, but I'm so, so excited about that one. And I have been teaching through all of my performance career. Somehow teaching fell into my lap at a very young age. So I've been working on the convention circuit for over 10 years. And currently I'm teaching jazz and Broadway on Revel Dance Convention, which this is our 7th season. I've been with them since the very beginning, which is wild. I really didn't know what it was going to turn into when they reached out to me about it, because I knew the owner. Him and I did a few gigs in New York City together while he was in his professional career. And then he's like, hey, Court, I'm starting a convention. And I was like, sure, sign me up. And no idea it would blow up to how big. And I'm just so proud to have been there from the beginning and watch it evolve and grow. So, and teaching is just something I absolutely adore and love. It's so awesome to connect with dancers every single weekend and just see how talented they are. Like this time of, they're amazing. I was not doing what these kids do when I was their age.
Right.
It's like, it's
not
really
even close.
I know.
Not even close.
I could never, honestly. So I'm always so inspired by the kids, and I judge every weekend as well with Revel, and I absolutely love judging. I have a judging company I started 8 years ago called Impact Dance Adjudicators, where we staff judges for competitions, which is something that's really niche and specific in our industry. But I kind of saw a need for it where I could tell that we needed a little bit more like pre-screened judges sitting behind the table that like know what they're doing, what they're talking about, not just being a seat filler. So I kind of saw the need for that in the competition industry. So I just kind of went for it and started a biz. I don't know what I was doing. Here I am 8 years later. And that's where our podcast comes into play. We have a little side podcast that's off part of our brand, and we chat dance competitions and all the hot topics in the dance world, which I'm sure you talk about lots of awesome dance topics on your podcast over here.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. I think we'd be like the after the Making the Impact one. So we're on like the
right.
Since you hit that trying to make it in the biz.
I love that.
This seems like a good place as any to remind you of some of the freebies I offer and how to find them. You can find my latest Reels cheat sheet, super great for planning out your reel shoot or just some video content creation, at justinementor.com/reels. I also offer a free class on my concept of the digital dance bag, which is an approach to organizing your online submissions for any kind of job. And of course, you can always jump into a free 20-minute one-on-one consultation that you can find at justcmentor.com/shop. Also, brand spanking new, if you're an avid listener of the podcast, I finally have a way you can support more than you already do by becoming a podcast producer. For $5 a month, fans of Dance Careers Unfiltered who want to support, make a production impact, and get their voices heard can visit justcmentor.com/podcast to learn more. Back to the episode.
I absolutely love that because there needs to be more conversations about that for our industry. I think that it's, and I'm sure, I don't know if you felt this way when you were heading into your professional career, but like I was completely walking in blind, lost, had no clue what I was doing. It took me about like 3 years to just figure out how to do this right before I even landed my first job. You know what I mean?
100%. Yeah. You're walking around with like a blindfold over your face and just like,
yeah.
And nowadays I can't even imagine starting now because there's so much information coming from like,
yeah,
so many different places and so many different people. And like, there's so many parts of that are really valid, but not always true for who you are and what you need. Mm. And it's, I'm sure that's like really loud for people. Like I give major props to everybody who is just like going for it.
Yeah. And even with the pandemic kind of getting in the way too, I always think about all those dancers who are like graduating in 2020 and think they're about to like hit the ground running in their dance career. And I'm like, oh man, like obviously we couldn't predict it, but it's definitely, it's tough for dancers now. I don't know how it is in LA, but in New York, like it's still very different atmosphere post pandemic as far as like how auditions work and things like that. It's not what it used to be.
Can you tell me about that? So how have things changed in the New York scene? I'm so curious.
So I will say, like, admittedly, I definitely have not retired from performing, but I am a little bit more particular with what I actually will go in and audition for these days, just because I have a really tight schedule with the convention and I love that job. So it's like, it has to be a really good gig to like get me off of being on a convention tour. So I haven't been auditioning as much as I used to, but like 10 years ago in New York City, there were specific seasons that were like the audition seasons. And I know in LA, things are a little bit more like last minute and like, oh, an artist is having a call tomorrow and it's like thousands of people show up. But like New York, things are a little more scheduled and they post notices for auditions like 2 weeks out for musicals and Broadway shows and things like that. So you can like pencil it into your schedule. Yeah. And tons of people show up. And there's the whole union stuff of non-ec versus equity, which is like the Broadway union. That being said, it used to be wild and crazy and we would be jumping around to, you know, three different auditions in audition season on the same day. Now, after the pandemic, you know, self-tapes were a thing. I think that they were definitely more of a thing in the West Coast scene before New York, like really only we were doing self-tapes here if you were going in for like a commercial audition or a movie audition, but we still had a lot of in-person stuff here. And then pandemic hit and boom, it's just turned into self-tape world. And like even for the Broadway union, the Equity, Actors Equity, it literally like a month ago they just started doing live in-person auditions, allowing live in-person auditions under the union rules because of the pandemic and safety and masking and vaccinations and everything. So you know, for the past practically 3 years at this point, people were just doing self-tapes and renting studio space because no one's apartments are big enough to actually learn combinations and dance to their best ability. You know, if you're going to actually spend the time to audition, you want to make sure you're delivering your best product. So you need the space to do it in the safe flooring and things like that. So it's been an interesting evolution of the audition hustle and grind over here in New York.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that they were so limited in in-person auditions still. That's wild.
Yeah, it used to be like, and I don't know like how much you guys have talked about the equity and non-equity department of like New York City dancing, which I feel like it exists in LA, but like it's definitely more prevalent over here in New York. But if you're an equity performer, which you're in the union, then you can always guarantee to get seen if you're going to an equity audition. Whereas like the non-union performers, which is usually the majority in the industry, there's no guarantee that they can even get seen at that audition because equity gets first dibs. Right. So that's how it always was leading up to it. And then like when everything just shut down and there were no auditions, everyone was like, how do I know that I'm getting seen properly? Yeah. Like even the Equity people, like we'd film these auditions and self-tapes and edit them and upload them to YouTube and they'd get zero views. And everyone's like, so did I just waste my time for like 5 hours filming this audition for what? And then you kind of hear that like choreographers are just hiring people that they know and they're not really going through the steps of like giving everyone a chance. Like it used to feel a little bit more, you know, like you had a shot. And now it just kind of feels like you had to have been established pre-pandemic to be able to still have a job post-pandemic, if that makes sense.
Totally. Yeah. It's like that vicious cycle of probably how it's kind of always been of like, if you got to get into like the cool rooms or like the more exclusive auditions, you have to know people, but you can't know people if you don't book those jobs.
Right.
It's like,
unless you're like in class 24/7 with that choreographer and they finally hire you, you know?
Maybe they're teaching, maybe they're not.
Exactly. Like if they're that in demand, they're not teaching at Broadway Dance Center. They don't have time. So
yeah,
that's the other. It's the hardest part. I know it's the same way in LA.
Yes, it is. It's like that weird exclusive little club and you can't like get into that club unless you know someone else who knows this person, and you can't get there unless, like, I remember being like, but why can't I just go to those calls? Why can't I go to the little calls? And they're like, well, you have to know so-and-so. And I'm like, but how do I get to know so-and-so if I can't get in their calls?
Yeah. That's how I felt the whole time being non-union. I was non-union from the time I moved to New York until I was 27. I booked my first national tour of Finding Neverland, the musical, which was an Equity tour. And my agents through my whole career were always like, don't buy into the union or don't get into the union that way. You want to earn your way into the union. You want like a job to hand you your Equity card. And I was like, okay, so that's what I kind of did.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get seen at the auditions because I was in Equity and there were 600 female dancers showing up. So I knew I needed to get in front of those choreographers. And it was just like, if they saw me, then they'd see my potential and then it might lead to something else. But I couldn't even get in the room, you know? So like, that's the hardest part, I think, for new dancers trying to break in, is how do you even get established and connect with the right people when there's so many things that are getting in your way from doing that?
100%. There's always like those first roadblocks to kind of break through, like how you were saying in the beginning, how it was like you were walking around for like 3 years trying to figure it out before there was even like a, okay, I'm getting the hang of this, or okay, I'm getting into the rooms that I want to get into, or meeting the right kind of people that work with like my specific skill set.
Right. And I think like what you said about the fact that there is so much information out now, which is like a good and bad thing, because it's like you need to really narrow it down to like the information that you need to hear. Because if you're listening to a podcast that's talking about, we just launched one that's talking about headshots and resumes. And like, to be completely honest, we were primarily speaking from the New York City scene of what's expected, because that's where all of the guests were from. But like, you can take that information and it'll probably work okay in LA, but there might be things that are slightly different that you have to kind of hear directly from a source in Los Angeles of, how should my resume look? What do casting in LA look? What do the choreographers in Los Angeles expect from my resume versus my resume that's formatted for New York City, you know?
Totally. You can always tell when a dancer comes over from New York to here. You can always tell just based on their headshots and their resume and just all of it. There totally is a different vibe.
Yeah. It's the same for us too. Cause like the LA dancers always have like the full body shot in like the little like awesome outfit. And they look like ferocious and fierce in their choice of photo, and they come to like something that's like very chill and like it's a little cruise ship, but it's like this fierce headshot. I'm like, oh wow, we don't even have those types of shots over here. Like, I wish we did, because everybody looks fierce.
I didn't take pictures like, well, I guess maybe like slightly, but we just didn't look as cool in 2007. But now, like, people are just going so full out with their outfits here and the makeup and the styling. They're hiring stylists for their shoots, and it's like a thing. And like, there's a lot of dancers that are like stylists now too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of crossover there.
It's cool though. I love it.
On your side, are you printing headshots and resumes?
Like still post-pandemic or
a post-pandemic? Are you like printing them staple back to back? Give it.
Yeah, we're still doing that. If there's an in-person audition, but like,
right,
that is definitely expected on our end to come with a headshot printed with your name on the front and an 8x10 with your resume stapled to the back in all four corners.
Yes. Okay.
And
so
like paper
we have those specs
cut to fit. It's like we trim the paper. Mm-hmm. I feel like that a lot of when I've gone to LA and things, people just like hand whatever out to the casting people. And it's like super perfect. Everyone is like, people will like ream you out in the room if they're like, you didn't cut your headshot, like in New York auditions.
I would call people out if they didn't do that. I'd be like, why aren't you doing that? So it's just like I think that's more of like a lazy-ish LA kind of ego driven place of like, I'm just gonna give what I have and give it to you and hope for the best. But I'm like, I'm an old school, like, no, you come prepared and professional and you make it look like it's supposed to look, and
attention to detail. It's like first impression.
100%. Exactly.
Like if you can't even staple your resume, how are you going to be on the job?
100%. Right. Are you going to show up on time?
I don't think a lot of people think like that. Exactly.
Yeah. It like everything that you do at that audition or at an audition relates back to how you'll be on a job, how you're showing up. When you're showing up, can you follow direction? Can you change on the fly? All of
and it's funny that you say that, because like when I talk to dancers about that and people, you know, see it from that perspective, they're like, oh, I didn't even think of it like that. And it's like, yes, but also as the dancer, I'm also like essentially auditioning or interviewing the choreographer and their team as well, because I'm coming here to audition for you, but like, what if I don't love the vibe that this choreographer is giving me in the room? Or what if the choreographer decided to show up 30 minutes late and waste my time when I came here early? Like that has happened so many times. I've literally walked out of auditions or the choreographer doesn't even know their own material and they just rely on their assistant to teach it and don't know the counts and don't know how to teach it properly. And it's like, if that's what the audition is, what will the rehearsal process be like? Because this is a disaster, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's nice to be able to have that, like the agency to be able to be like, I'm out of here. Like, these are my boundaries. I'm not going to work with someone like this and I'm out. Like, that's a really important note for young dancers to be like, because I tell people that with agents, like, I'm like, it's a working relationship. You do more in that relationship than they do. So what are they going to bring to the table that you're not already doing? And and are they responsive to you? And do you get along with them? Because that's a relationship you have to cultivate over years and years. Mm. But I haven't really thought of it from that end of walking into an audition. That's a really good point.
Yeah, it's something that I like eventually figured out. And I think that like for me in my career, and I started auditioning at 19. Yeah, 19. And now I'm 33. Like I've been doing it for like 15 years of just going in and out of different types and all types of auditions with different types of choreographers for different types of shows and gigs or what have you. And there are the people that like bring a great energy to the room, that don't intimidate you, that have like a, you know, nice light about them. Their assistants are welcoming. They don't get mad if you ask questions. They smile when you're performing. Like those are the people I want to work with. I don't want to work with the like divas that are like giving you looks and don't know what they're doing and show up late. You know, it's like it goes both ways to me. And I feel like, you know, at first you're breaking in, you just are grateful for anything. But then as you do this for a few years, you start to realize what the good auditions are and what the not so great, or who the good choreographers that you want to work with and these are why they have that reputation. Like, and that's the industry.
Yeah, that's the reality of the situation. Absolutely. Yeah.
And knowing your worth too, I think is super important. And that's something else that evolved for me as I got older. But at the same time, I was always really it sounds like horrible to say this, but like I've left multiple jobs before because I just knew it wasn't right for me and I could feel it. It's like a gut instinct where you're just like, this isn't what I signed up for. I don't really think that I can sit on tour for 8 more months doing this. I have some crazy stories, and it's at the time everyone's like, I can't believe you would leave. I can't believe you would quit. And it's like,
yeah,
but there's always something else. Another door is going to open. And if I didn't quit, I was just going to be miserable and doing this job for what? Like, it just doesn't feel worth it when there's so many more opportunities out there for us.
That's so great that you can recognize those, like, those boundaries for yourself.
It's definitely tough.
Your self-worth.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard in the beginning. And when you're, like you said, like, you're like, oh, I just need any opportunity. I need this credit. I need to pay my rent. And a lot of it comes from that place of fear and also desperation of, like, just like trying to validate your journey and, like, all this effort that you're taking to do it. And you just need that validation, that gold star and the stamp in a literal sense. But it's so hard because nobody wants to be in those situations.
Yeah.
But you're feeling icky and.
Yeah. I know. I mean, like, the main example that I use often in, like, these types of stories that I tell, and I won't go into the full detail of it, but
yeah.
I left my first equity job. So the Finding Neverland job that I finally booked and was hired to do. And I, mm-hmm. it was a dream. It was what I've been working for my whole career. I left it because of a certain situation that happened, and it just wasn't what I signed up for. And I called my agent. I was 27 and I called my agent at the time when I told them, I think I'm going to quit. And my agent was completely backed me up and supportive of me because of the situation that I was in. And they were like, you know, if you were 21 straight out of college, I probably wouldn't be on, like, I'd probably try to convince you out of this whole quitting thing, but you're a little more seasoned. You know, this is the right choice for you. You have other credits under your belt. It's not going to hurt you in any way in the industry if you leave this job, and you have other things to come back to. So I think it's the right choice for you. So again, I think it really depends on your position. Like you were kind of just saying, like, of course, when you're breaking in, it's hard to really know what's right or know your worth at that time. You're just establishing yourself. But like, as you get older and wiser, you can start making those, you know, tough decisions, but the right decisions, I think.
Yeah. Adulting, right?
Ugh, it's tough. It's so hard. I think especially like with the industry in general of being a professional dancer, the hardest part of adulting is how do you pay your rent when you are in between gigs? Because you are auditioning more than you're working, and that's like the biggest question people ask me all the time is like, well, what's your survival job? How do you get by? How do you pay for your rent? You know?
Totally. Yeah. I get that all the time too. I'm like, well, in the beginning, you do need a survival job.
Yeah.
You'll need one in the beginning, and then you'll figure it out.
What do you feel like that majority of people's survival jobs in Los Angeles are? I'm so curious.
A lot of restaurant jobs, or at least that's what it was when I started. Like, I worked as a hostess at a restaurant, like, right by the Grove. I lived right over there, so it was perfect. I wasn't ever in the North Hollywood side, so I've stayed on that. I was like more of like an edge girl. I wanted to do that. So yeah, I worked in the food industry for a while, and then, but a lot of people now I think are doing like Uber and things like that as
really?
Well, because it, or like Uber Eats or whatever it might be, things like that, because they can kind of set their own schedule.
Right.
You know, a lot of Starbucks, a lot of Starbucks people who do like that graveyard shift, like 4 a.m. and then they're done by like 9, and then they're 10 or whatever, and then they're like ready to go for the rest of the day, auditions and whatnot.
Wow.
So I think it's like a mix of a bunch of things now. Teaching dance, a lot of people go and do that. That's probably people doing that in New York too.
Yeah.
That's even hard to survive fully on, you know, like, cause that's only super part time. You can't do that. Most of the time you can't do it full time.
Exactly. So, yeah. It's pretty New much York? The same. It's the same. I think everyone has had a waitressing or waiter job, bartending, hostessing, something in the food industry, mainly because it doesn't get in the way of auditions. Like that's always like the main thing is auditions take place Monday through Friday, 10 to 6. And what job can I have that will not get in the way? And if I have my final callback and I have to be there till 6 o'clock, who can cover my shift, you know, easily? So I think that's always been, and there's like, you know, trillion chains of restaurants here in New York. So I think it's like that retail,
yeah,
teaching dance. But like teaching dance is really tough here. And I'm sure it's kind of the same in LA because of the traffic.
Yeah.
But like you can't, there's nowhere to teach dance in Manhattan unless you're teaching literally at Broadway Dance Center or Steps. But if you want to like work in a studio setting, you have to go to Long Island, go up to like Westchester, Connecticut, or go out to New Jersey. And that all involves public transit if you don't have a car, which tax on at least like it's a 2-hour commute each way, no matter what.
Each way. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because you just can't rely on the public transit. Like, you got to take a subway to then take a bus to then take an Uber, and now you're at the studio.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. But, like, some people can get by doing, like, 2 nights a week teaching and then, you know, maybe having, like, one other gig, and then that opens up their week to be able to take class. And, like, a lot of people do the work studies at Broadway Dancer and Step so they can get their classes, you know, a little bit discounted and things like that.
Totally. And are you teaching, you teach at Steps, right?
I currently teach at Steps on Broadway. I'm a guest faculty. So I have such a crazy schedule that I don't really have, honestly, time for a weekly slot.
Yeah.
But I love it because it's actually really, it's different for me. I've only ever taught kids my entire education career. So it was an interesting change for me to work with adults finally and like actual professional dancers. I approach class with the same personality, but I think it's kind of different where I still like, you know, control the room, but I don't really want to go around and like give corrections as much because these are pros. Like they want to come and they just want to like learn style and musicality. And like, they're beyond the like stretch through your back leg and your leap. Like they know how to do that, you know? So just the approach of the class and you want to just make it like a very welcoming community space that, you know, feels good. And you're walking away feeling validated and like good about your class and not feeling like burnt out or, you know, sad about how you did. Like it shouldn't feel like that. It should just feel like a good old jazz class. So I teach primarily jazz or theater jazz and heels, and which is what a lot of people in New York teach. Everyone's in a Laduca over here in New York City.
Oh my gosh, come over to LA. No one's doing that.
I know, except for Will Bell. He does it.
Yes.
I'm so proud of him. We grew up actually in Maryland together and we teach on Revel now together.
Oh, that's right.
But when I saw him like teaching his, you know, jazz and heels or theater jazz, Broadway-esque style out in Los Angeles, I was like, go you, because no offense to LA, but like, it's just so commercial and so hip hop that there's nothing like that out there. And I was like, way to dominate like that niche in the industry. 100%. Out in Los Angeles, whereas like in New York, like people don't come to class unless you're dancing in a Laduca. Like that's just what it's turned into in New York City. I know, it's kind of interesting. So
it's been a minute since I've been there.
Yeah.
I did like BDC's summer internship when I was in college.
Yeah.
This is like 2005 maybe.
Nice. Where'd you go to school?
Oh, my God. I went to Indiana University. Yeah. Wait, and I wasn't even studying dance.
You weren't?
No.
I was going to say, is that the one with the ballet program? Like
they have a really good ballet program. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I took class there. You know, I took class in the programs, but I didn't major in dance.
Gotcha.
But I was able to go. I went during the summer to BDC, and then I went the next summer because I loved it so much. And I just work studied there in the marketing department. So I had a blast, but so different. But I was like, I'm only taking Luam and, you know, like I was like majorly into hip hop and like I would take like Michelle Barker and like, you know, just like classic, very classic jazz. And whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can get that real jazz dance out here in New York for sure.
I miss that a lot.
Yeah.
So what do you think has been like the one thing that has really driven your career along the most beyond your dance skills?
Huh, that's a tough question.
Yeah. Like behind the scenes stuff.
I think what is something that every dancer needs to be able to really succeed is to have the passion, but also that hustle and grind, because there's just so many opportunities out there and you have to they're not going to just fall into your lap. You have to really find them and create them for yourself. And just kind of approaching each and every day, especially when you're just breaking into that type of networking and grinding to find out, all right, I remember even when I was in college before I even started, and I only went to school for one semester because I just wanted to break into the biz like right away. And I remember like waking up before I'd go to my first class at school and go on to Answers for Dancers, which was a big site back in the day, to see all the dance breakdowns of what auditions are happening today. And there'd be like a whole slew of like 10 different auditions that I could be at. And it's like, okay, get your calendar out, you pencil it in. Which ones do I care about? Which ones do I want to go to? Which jobs do I want to do? And just grinding. Like and then if you're not at an audition, you're in class, you're networking, you're doing different things to keep yourself involved and immersed in the industry and meeting the right people, like we talked about. So I think that having that drive, because it's always been there. I've always known this is what I want to do and I'm going to make it work. And there have been a lot of people that have been like, I don't know if you can actually do it. You really think you're going to be a professional? You really think you can survive in New York City, the most expensive city in the world? It's like, no, I can. Yes, I can. I'll figure it out. I will figure this out. Yeah. And like that kind of fuels you a little bit to like really motivate you to prove them wrong a little bit. So it's been definitely challenging for sure. And I've learned so much, but I would say having that drive and that passion guiding you through, I think is what sets you up for success for sure.
Love that.
Yeah.
So tell everyone how they can find you online.
Online, I'm on Instagram at Courtney.Ortiz. I do not do TikTok. Sorry about it. I have yet to download that app, y'all. I need to get with it. Same. But I don't know. It's just another thing I got to do, you know? So I just do Instagram and I love it. And I post a lot of my teaching videos there. And our podcast is, you can follow our Instagram called Impact Dance Adjudicators, which is my business, but that's where we post our podcasts as well, which is called Making the Impact, the Dance Competition Podcast Community. And we do weekly episodes too. So, you know, if you want more dance knowledge and we talk about all different things. It's called a dance competition podcast, but we have evolved a little bit to talk about other things similar to like some of your discussions that you have on this podcast about transitioning and breaking into the professional career. I think it's important to talk about that because most of the kids that are growing up in the competitive world maybe want to go into the pro world, but don't know how. So more information for that transitional period is there.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much. It was so good to catch up with you.
Yes, of course. I love being here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to check out mentor.management on Insta and justinementor.com/mentormanagement. That's MNTRMGMT. Check out the show notes to find links to my offerings and today's guest. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show. See you next time.